This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is Cecile Andrews, author of Circle of Simplicity, Slow is Beautiful, and co-founder of Finney Ecovillage, a neighborhood project in Seattle building sustainability and community. Cecile has her doctorate in education from Stanford University and now focuses on community education, helping people live simpler, slower, and smaller. Cecile Andrews is here today to tell us about her most recent book, co-authored with Wanda Urbanska, entitled Less is More, Embracing Simplicity for a Healthy Planet, a Caring Economy, and Lasting Happiness. Welcome, Cecile. Welcome back to the sustainability segment.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
What led you to write Less is More?
Well, it just seemed the right time for it. It's a book of essays with people who've been writing about simplicity over the years. Duane Elgin, Bill McKibben, David Corton, Juliet Shore, all these wonderful people. And with the economy the way it is, it just seemed like this was the right time. And the publisher, I sent him an email, and the next day he sent back and said, yes, let's do that. And it really seems to be the time that people are paying attention, because simplicity has been something that, you know, it's waxed and waned throughout the years. And then people pay attention again. So it's really a perennial philosophy.
What is simplicity? What are the key elements?
Well, I love thinking about simplicity because it is so complex, ironically enough. But essentially, on one level, it's about cutting back. But when you talk about that, people get really scared. They think, oh, my God, we're never going to have any fun. She's going to take everything away from us. And my favorite quote is somebody, this young man, who said to me, what is that? You're involved in that self-deprivation movement. Well, it's not that at all. It's like, this is why it's less is more. It's really about enjoying your life more. And if people are not enjoying their life more as they try to simplify, they're doing it wrong. And so what we're really focusing on is not so much the less, but the more. And in fact, I think if people really want to live more simply, they focus first on the more, figuring out what it is that they really want to do and seeing how everything in your life gets in the way of that. And so to me, simplicity is really, it's the examined life in which people ask themselves what's important and what matters. And then they ask themselves, am I having time for this? And they see that in a consumer society, they're working too much, they're shopping too much, they're rushing around too much, and they're not enjoying their lives. So we're starting with that. But of course, it's not just for personal happiness. It's also for the planet. I mean, we literally do not have a choice about consuming less. People are, I think, finally understanding that when you consume, it totally involves oil in the making of the stuff and the transporting it and your working to buy it, and that this is climate change. So I think it's interesting. We can tell people how bad things are getting, but I don't know if it motivates them. I think they need a positive vision, and to me, that's what simplicity is, to say, this consumer lifestyle, it's not only ruining the planet, it's not even making you happy. So take a look at this other philosophy and make conscious choices about what you're doing.
Well, you've really been alluding to this, but could you say more about the goal of simplicity or leading a simpler life, the purpose of it?
Well, I think the first goal has to be happiness for people, because happier people are always better on the environment. They're better parents. They're better citizens. And it's interesting because there's been a lot of research on happiness in the last several years. And the research is clear that after a certain point, more money and more stuff does not make people happy. That what makes people happy is connection with other people, friends, family, community, civic involvement, you know, caring about the common good. That is very clear. And so we have to help people see that, because we have a belief system in this country that if you're rich, you'll be happy. And that isn't true, but it is the pursuit of this that's not only destroying the planet, but it leads to corruption. Think of Madoff. You know, it leads to social injustice, the way corporations pay people. It leads to wars. Why do people think we're in our wars? The people making money off of them. So really, simplicity is saying to people, you know, money cannot be your main goal in life. We cannot have just unbridled profit. It doesn't work. It's destroying the planet, and it's destroying people's happiness. So it's very clear that we have to make these changes, but we have to get people excited about them because just shaking the finger doesn't always work.
Would you like to highlight a few of the authors who have essays in your book?
Yeah, you know, the one that probably most people know is Duane Elgin because he wrote Voluntary Simplicity back in the early 80s, and he's really been talking about that. And another person, of course, is Bill McKibben, who's really doing so much about climate change, and he talks about a mature economy. John DeGraff, you know, he's what's the economy for? He talks about that because we've got to be clear about that. One that people won't expect is Theodore Roszak, who did The Making of a Counterculture many years ago. Now he has a new book coming out, Making of an Elder Culture, that people, baby boomers, have to transform things. David Corton, our local person on Bainbridge with Yes Magazine, of course. Another exciting one, Ernest Kallenbach, who did Ecotopia many years ago. These people all have fresh things to say. And of course, Juliet Shore, who got a lot of it started with her Overworked American. And I like Jay Waljasper a lot, who had worked with Ode Magazine. So it's like, wow, you know, even when I look at this again, I know these people, I've talked to them, worked with them, but I get so excited. So there are a lot of really, really good people in here.
In your book, there are a number of essays by people who have chosen a simpler life and how it changed their life for the better. Would you share some of the examples?
Well, it's interesting because, one, most of these are pieces by people that, as I say, people know. And one of the things about the simplicity movement is I love the people in it. If you want a group of nice people, it's just, you know, I just love them all. But there are a few that I hadn't met before, and my co-editor, Wanda Urbanska, is on the East Coast. She has a program, Simple Living TV, with Wanda Urbanska, and she's been very active over the last several years. And she's found a young woman who decided to totally make her life over and move to Poland because she had ancestors there. And it's like she quit her job here, she sold her house, she went over there. And when I got this piece, it was just really entrancing to see how somebody could make these changes. And I thought, well, what should we call it? It didn't have a title. And so I called it A Life I Can Love. And because I think that's what everybody wants, a life they can love. And this was taking a big risk. And a lot of us are afraid of taking risks. And I know that I myself, the changes I've made only came after I heard other people's stories. I used to be a community college administrator, and I quit that after I heard of a lot of other people thinking, well, I'm going to cut back on my expenditures so I can do work that I really love. We also created two apartments in our house. You know, we have a large enough house, and I would never have done that unless I heard somebody else's story, because it's like we get locked into the conventional way of living. And we don't even know that there are alternatives. And when you hear somebody tell their story, you get very excited and you think, oh, wow, maybe I could do that. So there are a lot of stories like that in this book. But that's the one that really struck me about going all the way to Poland, reconnecting with your, you know, people from your family from way back and creating a new life, a totally new life.
What are some of the practical steps that people have taken to go towards a simpler life?
Well, I really think it's first taking time to think about what really does get you excited in life. One of the big things about simplicity, it's not just cutting back on stuff, as people think, but that's an important part of it. But it's being able to cut back on all sorts of, you know, things that take up your time so you have time for the things that are important. Of course, my last book, Slow is Beautiful, had to do with leisure, you know, that we don't have leisure. We don't move at a leisurely pace. And to me, the core of that is the ability to reflect, to think through. I mean, if you're always rushing, you're not even aware of how you're feeling and you're just doing what other people want you to do. It's just like you go automatically. And so the first step is always stop and think and ask, is this life satisfying to me? And then start reading. The wonderful thing that's changed over the years is that you can read all about living simply on the web. Everybody is doing something. I mean, I get a Google alert on voluntary simplicity every day, and I get, you know, several examples of people writing about it. So you start looking at all the alternatives, and then you always start small. You know, you don't want to just jump into anything or else it does feel like deprivation. But the big thing is I think you start, you know, the book is less is more, but you start with the more and you think, what is it I want to do? And one of the things right now it's people are really getting excited about community. And so you find a way to get involved in something exciting, and then you don't want to go to the mall. You don't want to go spend your money. And so you find yourself cutting back with no effort at all. So I would concentrate on what really gets you excited, what is really finding your passion. And then the other stuff almost falls into place.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Cecile Andrews, co-editor with Wanda Urbanska of the book Less is More, Embracing Simplicity for a Healthy Planet, a Caring Economy, and Lasting Happiness. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Several of the authors in your book bring out that mindfulness and concentrating on inner rather than outer values is part of a simpler life and one of its benefits. Would you say more and explain?
Well, the whole idea of mindfulness has obviously been around for a long time. And sometimes you have to use different language to get people's attention. And that's where I've come to write about the idea of slow. This is a whole kind of movement that really came out of the slow food movement. The slow food movement, which started as, you know, a joke when McDonald's moved into Italy, and they thought, oh, my God, you know, we can't have fast food. That's not why people come here. But they said, you know, we've got to take time eating. You're not supposed to be eating with, you know, your one hand while you're driving. You have to take time, have good food, good conversation. And what it became is this image of the joyful community. And then they linked that to environmental issues. We've got to be eating good food. You have to pay attention to how it's grown. You have to look at organic, you know, and not genetically modified food. And then they linked that to social justice. You have to pay attention to the corporations. What are they doing? So I thought, here is a wonderful movement, the slow movement, because it spontaneously went around the world. And so all of us involved in social change need to pay attention to something that just spreads on its own. And so part of this slow movement is mindfulness, but it's talking about it in a different way. It's like being able to go through your day and enjoy that day. You enjoy the people you meet. You enjoy the things you're doing. You enjoy what you're eating. You enjoy nature because you're paying attention. And that's really what mindfulness is. It's paying attention and appreciating and enjoying it. And if you're always rushing, you don't do that. And so people know about mindfulness, particularly if they're involved in Buddhism, but getting other people's attention, this slow life. And I even came up with an acronym, Sustainable Lives of Wonder. And I think of that wonder part, that's what's missing. Americans are so productivity oriented. We're going to get more done. We're going to get things accomplished. We're going to achieve. And mindfulness is saying, no, the slow life is saying, I'm really going to enjoy what's right in front of me. I'm going to quit worrying about tomorrow, you know, dreading what's happening, thinking about all my mistakes yesterday. So it's really paying attention. And so that's where I come up with the slow part of simplicity.
Several of the authors in your book who have chosen simplicity speak about their lives becoming more balanced. Would you amplify on that idea?
Balance is a really good word that people can understand. And I think the biggest place where people see the word balance being important is in terms of work-life balance. And this, of course, is a big part of what we're doing. I work with John DeGraff on the Take Back Your Time campaign. And the overwork of Americans is astounding. And some people know October 24th is Take Back Your Time Day. And it's on that day, if Americans didn't work until the next January 1st, we'd be working the same amount of time as the average European. We work 9 weeks more, and this is a combination of vacations, of parental leave, of sick leave, shorter work hours. People think, oh, you know, we've got a bad economy now. How can we talk about this? But maybe this is at the root of everything. If you don't have time, how can you be a good citizen? How can you inform yourself? How can you get together with other people? How can you go to meetings to change things? And so being a citizen is at the center of this. The whole time thing with being, you know, family members, of being healthier. So balance has to say we've got to take back our time. It's just crucial. And, of course, right now we have a vacation bill in Congress asking for 1 week. Now, people are shocked to learn that we have no guaranteed vacation in this country. In Europe, you have 4 weeks guaranteed vacation if you're working in Europe. And a lot of American companies that are there, their people get the 4 weeks. The people here may not be getting any at all. And this is so crucial. I think it's something like the Guyanas, Nepal, and Burma are the only other countries in the world who don't have a paid vacation policy. So balance really has to do with, do you have time for the things that matter? And it's time for friends and family, time for civic involvement, time for reflection, creativity. It's just absolutely crucial. So I think people understand the word balance. So all these different words I think are important. Simplicity, mindfulness, balance, slow, all mean the same thing. But it's a chance to feel and think deeply, which we can't do if we're rushing.
Would you say more about the benefits to society of individuals having more free time?
Well, again, I think the first thing you come up with is we're right in the middle of a healthcare reform debate. This is absolutely crucial for people's health. There's no question about exercise. There's no question that the foods we eat are fast foods, processed foods. People taking more time to make their own dinners, to grow some of their own food. But the biggest thing, and this is the biggest thing that has to do with health that people don't realize, is that the biggest one is this connection with friends and family. It's having time to hang out with people. It's having time to have people over. Social isolation is a huge cause. There's one person that says it's as bad as smoking one pack of cigarettes a day, social isolation. And, you know, most of our interactions with people are rushed. You see people and you say, hi, how are you? And they say, oh, fine, but I'm busy. And so you think, oh, I won't take any more of your time. And so there's so many benefits of having free time. But the big one to me, and this is part of what I'm involved in Finney Eco Village, is making time for people to come together, hang out. One of the things we have is a simplicity circle. Every Monday night at the church across the street from the zoo, we get together and we talk about living simply. We have wonderful conversations. People love it. And there's this sense that you're really getting to connect with people in ways that you almost never do. So there's so many benefits to having more time.
How does the simple life alluded to in your book relate to those in poverty?
Well, this is an essential question. First of all, people in poverty are not living simply. People in poverty are suffering deprivation, a struggle for survival. So this is a middle-class movement. People have said to me, oh, this is just a bunch of middle-class whiners. You know, you got yours, you don't want anybody else to have it. Well, we may be the first people to have affluence and see that it is not satisfying. But even though people who are in poverty are not living simply, this is very, very relevant to people in poverty because it is this sick quest for more and more money that causes people to stay in poverty. It's the reason that corporations do not pay people well enough. It's the reason that the insurance companies are refusing to have health care reform because they want profits. And profits, people think it's okay. People think, again, as I said, that if you're rich, you're happy. 80% of people think that if they work hard enough, that might be changing now. This is a few years ago. If they work hard enough, they could be rich. So as long as people believe that money is the most important thing in their lives, the poor will suffer. And so the big thing about simplicity is to get people to rethink their value system around money. Money cannot be our top priority, but it is in this country now. And so that's what has to change for poor people.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Cecile Andrews, co-editor with Wanda Urbanska of the book Less is More, Embracing Simplicity for a Healthy Planet, a Caring Economy, and Lasting Happiness. What does simplicity mean in terms of public policy? What is civic simplicity?
Well, it's interesting because it's difficult in this culture, in this society, to just live simply. One, it's difficult when we don't have time, so we need public policy on time, more vacations, shorter work weeks, sick leave, parental leave. So we need public policy like that. We need public policy on health care. But the biggest public policy thing to me is the one that's just, to me, has been amazing. The research is very clear. The biggest predictor for the health of a nation, as measured in terms of longevity, is the gap between the rich and the poor. And it's not just that the poor people suffer more and bring down the average. The middle-class person, the rich person in this culture, does not have the longevity they do in Europe of a middle-class or rich person, because there's something about having the gap that destroys social ties. It ruins social cohesion. It creates a very stressful society. And that's what we have. So to me, the biggest policy issue is doing something about this gap between the rich and the poor. When everybody is around the same, people care about the common good. When you have the rich and the poor, the rich are always pressing to get more. You can see that somehow being rich is kind of like an illness. It makes people want more and more and more. They never have enough. And so we've got to do something to protect these poor people from this horrible, insane thing that happens to them of wanting more and more by having, you know, something at the bottom so people don't get homeless and something at the top so people don't get egregiously rich.
What do you think most stands in the way of simplicity and living a simpler lifestyle? What keeps it from being more widespread?
Well, I think one of the things is advertising. Advertising is telling you all the time that there's something wrong with you and if you buy their product. And if you want to buy their product, you have to have more money. And so you work harder. It's the message that stuff is going to make you happy. But it's very deep within American society because we came to this country. Many of us left the old country. Some people were obviously forced here by themselves as slaves. But it was a tearing people away. And so we have a group of people who came here and community was not their biggest goal. And we are so individualistic that we don't understand the importance of community. And so we keep striving for our own benefit. We have to create a culture, this is Obama's words, in which we're all in this together, that people understand this. Right now, it's every man for himself, you're on your own. And so there's this deep thing in American society that says, go on your own and go it alone. And somehow, if you have a society that understands that your true welfare is your connection with other people, then you have some security. But if you don't understand that, then you think money and stuff is your security and you have to go after that. So Americans have that in our heritage, and then it's reinforced by advertising and everything corporations do.
What are some of the best ways to promote community?
Oh, well, we have a whole movement here in Seattle. People know about Sustainable Ballard. We have Finney Eco Village, although we're changing that to Sustainable Finney and Greenwood. And so this is to address both building community in your neighborhood and sustainability. Because Bill McKibben in particular says we will not have sustainability unless we have community in our neighborhoods, that we have to have localization. One of the biggest issues is how far our food comes from everywhere, what happens in the resources used up. You know, farmers markets are just thriving. People love going to the farmers markets. As Bill McKibben says, there are 10 times as many conversations at a farmers market as there are in a grocery store. And that it is this connection with other people. So take a look and see if in your neighborhood, we have a website called Scallops, Sustainable Communities All Over Puget Sound. And there's Sustainable Capitol Hill, Sustainable Ballard, Sustainable Finney, Sustainable, you know, Green Lake. Go to those and get involved in that, because that's the most exciting thing. Now, just starting to have people over, do it in a simple way. People think, oh, my house isn't clean enough, I don't have enough time. This is so important to your health. And so somehow put it at the top of your list. But I think it's made easier, as I say, by having these neighborhoods. But the last chapter in my book is about how to start your simplicity circle. And it's much easier to simplify if you're talking with other people. And so you can have it at home, you can have it in your church, at school, at work, whatever. But the nice thing about this book is the essays are very, very short. So people can read them right before they go into their simplicity circle. And you can have the wonderful conversation. And that's, to me, the heart of what we're talking about. It's bringing back conversation, and you can do it in a simplicity circle.
What do you hope your book will accomplish?
Well, it's one, I hope people get excited about simplicity circles again. For too long, I think simplicity has been a little, people have done it on their own. And I want people to realize that there is the level of personal change, but there has to be community change to keep it sustainable. You almost can't sustain it on your own. And then you have to have public policy change, that it's not just going it alone and doing it on your own. You have to have those three levels. And ultimately, it's changing our belief system about what's important and what matters.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Oh, well, that simplicity is really about enjoying your life more. That really, if you're enjoying it less, you're doing it wrong. It is not about self-deprivation as people fear. It's about, wow, you know, just going through that life and enjoying talking to people and enjoying nature and enjoying a good book and enjoying your people at work. And it's about enjoyment. It's consuming less and living more. And I think that's what we all want.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Cecile.
Thank you.
We have just been speaking with Cecile Andrews, co-editor with Wanda Urbanska of the book Less is More, Embracing Simplicity for a Healthy Planet, a Caring Economy, and Lasting Happiness, published in 2009 by New Society Publishers. For more information, check on the web at www.cecileandrews.com. Again, that's cecileandrews.com. You are invited to join Cecile this Saturday afternoon, September 12th, at Elliott Bay Books at 5 p.m. for a discussion of her book. She will be joined by filmmaker John DeGraff, who is one of the book's contributors and who spoke on the sustainability segment last spring. Again, Cecile Andrews and John DeGraff this Saturday, September 12th, 5 p.m. at Elliott Bay Books in Seattle. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, selected sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on podcasting, and scroll down to Mind Over Matters sustainability segment. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.